This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals? They pick the right cards, they somehow end up in first class for the price of coach. Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards are worth the annual fee and which just make your wallet heavier. When lounge access beats buying airport dinner for four. And when it makes sense to book flights with cash versus points. So don't travel dumb. Travel smart. Upgrade trips, not bills, with NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. My guest today is Azdeen El-Mustakim. But before we get to Azdeen, I have a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there. You'll find links to our social media. And that is, of course, Instagram. Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. We have a Facebook page. You can follow us there. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are on those streaming devices, as most of you are, please give us a good rating because that helps more people find the show and boosts our presence there. And that's a cool thing for you to do. So if you can do that, I'd appreciate it. If you think you'd be right for the show, or maybe you know somebody right for the show, or maybe you want to ask me travel questions or tell me I'm great, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. I have a few disclaimers for this episode. It bothers me to no end that I'm making excuses again after last week being on the road and having guests drop out, and I ran an encore episode. This week, I had a whole different set of problems. Yes, I got this interview done. We managed to schedule it a couple days before it drops on this date, because I like to drop a new episode every Thursday. So I recorded it on Tuesday, planned to edit it later that Tuesday. And after the recording, I noticed two problems. Number one, our guest Azdeen, he of DestinationsMorocco.com and the Destination Morocco podcast, he was great. He had a beautiful microphone in his home studio. Sounded pretty good, but when I heard it back, there was a on-again, off-again echo. That just when you think it's gone, it comes back for a little bit, and there you go. So just be forewarned of that. It's not through the whole thing, but it happens. Number two, and worst of all, I've made a mistake that I've only made a few times in the 14 years of doing this. I began the interview without first checking the inputs of my recording. When you see the meter going and know that the computer is picking up your sound, great. We're off and running. You begin the interview. What I didn't do was on the recording program, check the input and see that it was not picking up my nice microphone that I'm talking in right now. The sound it was picking up was from the crappy laptop mic that I was looking at. So instead of this nice clear sound that you're hearing right now, you hear me talking into a laptop mic through the whole thing. Now I could do two things. I could scrap the whole interview and do it all over again with Azdeen, or I could give it to you as is with apologies. So for fans of Azdeen who've never heard this show before and maybe tuned in for the first time, just know that it doesn't always sound like this. This was on me, and to all the listeners, I apologize for this one. However, it was great to meet Azdeen and to hear about Morocco, a place that I've been really dying to get to for 20 years. It's been on my bucket list. So I had a lot of questions to ask about it. He's a great resource when it comes to that country, his home country. He's lived in Houston for the last 30 years, but goes back all the time to Morocco. And his company, Destinations Morocco, can book your travel, organize tours, guides, set you up whenever you want to go there. And you can bet when I do finally make it to Morocco, he's the guy I'm going to call first. So let's head to North Africa, shall we? And my apologies again for the dodgy sound. All I can say is next week is a new week, and I promise to do better. Here's my talk with Azdeen El-Mustakim.
Azdeen El-Mustakim.
Azdeen El-Mustakim.
That's it? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man, okay. I knew I was going to butcher that, but I gave it a shot.
Okay, so you're talking to me from your lovely home studio there in Houston, Texas.
Yes.
And thank you for doing this. And one of the reasons why I wanted you on here is because, like, I hate the term bucket list, but I use it all the time. And Morocco has been high on my bucket list for quite a while. And you're an expert in Morocco. You run destinationsmorocco.com, which is a travel site. And I wanted to pick your brain of all things Morocco. It's a very hot destination. People go there all the time. First of all, tell me, I mean, I'm assuming you're a native. And how did you get to Houston and why? And when did you get into the travel business?
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, Mike, I'm very grateful for this opportunity to be on your podcast. It's amazing. I truly, truly appreciate it. So what got me, well, I came to the U.S. in 1995 as a student, and I never finished my study, so I started working. I started in the hospitality business. Since then, I worked in different restaurants, hotels. Then I had a transportation company back in, we started in 2007, 2008. And then along the way, you know, me and my wife, we traveled back and forth to Morocco. And then we had our son, Imran. And that kind of really changed things for us in a way, because we know we are foreigners. We know where we come from, but we know he's American. But we want him to know his roots, you know, back, you know, all the way to Africa. So he's 10 now, but he's been to Morocco 3 or 4 times already, and he loves it. And he talks about Morocco with, you know, passion. It's just unbelievable. So that's what really got us into Destinations Morocco, and that's how we created it. And we started the podcast about, I would say, 2021. It took me about a year with our producer, Ted, because I'm really, really shy. I mean, it took me a while just to, you know, breathe in and breathe out with the mic and all that stuff. So, and then we started officially in 2022. Now we have over 150,000 downloads, over 100 episodes, and we're globally, you know, people listen to us from everywhere. Our first number one market is the US, number two is Canada, and then it goes back and forth. So I hope I answered the questions, maybe.
Yeah. Well, no, well, you have to get the name of the podcast out here so we can get the plugs out of the way. It's Morocco podcast, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Destination Morocco podcast. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, sure. Now, is your wife Moroccan?
Yes, we're actually neighbors back home. So.
Oh, okay. So you didn't come over together, or you did?
Well, I came first in 95, then she came with me in 2007.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Did you do a long distance relationship for
some time? Yes.
Wow, that's a
for a couple of years. Yeah, it is tough. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I want to get back to you growing up. We'll get to Morocco and the whole thing, but just your immigrant experience. You said you came here to go to university. Was that the was that the point? And what happened? Why did you leave? What happened?
I didn't really know how expensive universities in the United States are. So with the money that I brought with me, I paid for my, you know, ESL classes or English, if you would, because I'm a foreigner. Then I ran out of money. So I had to stop.
Very American.
And I had to work.
Oh, boy. So you started working in restaurants. And,
yes.
And hotels as well?
Yes.
It's funny, you work in hospitality, but you say you're shy.
Well,
and it doesn't seem to go together.
Yeah.
What did you do? Were you attending bar? Were you working?
Well,
in the...
when I started in the restaurant, because I didn't really speak. I mean, the English I could understand more than I can speak. So I started working for a few months as a busboy, just cleaning tables. As my English improved, I became a waiter, then so forth. Then I start, you know, I worked at, you know, the Westin Hotel, the Marriott, and so forth and so forth. Then I worked a little bit in retail. Then I worked at a dealership. Then, you know, I came back again to retail. So it's a long story. So back and forth. Then I ended up working at, you know, the Houstonian Hotel as a bellman. And that's when I started in the transportation. helping my friends, driving for them. And that's how I started the company in the transportation business. And then in 2016, we created Destinations Morocco.
Okay, yeah. 2016.
Yeah.
So now getting into the travel promotion and the business, was it because so many people were asking you about Morocco and you were giving advice and you said, wait a minute, I have a talent here to describe my homeland and tell them where to go?
It's actually, you know, again, my son was really the inspiration, but then people from Morocco were asking me that versus in the US. They was like, hey, you know, this will be easy for you to do. US, it's a big market and so forth. Then it's like, okay, you know what? Okay. So we started doing it. And then I realized that doing it in the US is very different than doing it in Morocco, because Morocco, that's what everybody expects you to be. You're there, you're selling the tours and so forth. But in the US, it seems a little bit off in a way. You know, people now are kind of, they understand we have two locations and so forth. So it makes sense now to them.
Well, when you say everybody, so many people in Morocco are running tours and doing like that, is tourism the number one industry there now?
It really is. Just to give the audience a little bit of perspective, an idea how it is big in Morocco. Every household has somebody in the tourism industry, whether directly or indirectly. In terms of numbers, you mentioned earlier, Mike, that Morocco is really hot, and it is. In terms of where it ranks in Africa, last year, it was for the first time the number one destination in Africa. Normally, Egypt is.
Egypt and Kenya, and you outdid those two, huh? Wow.
Okay. Absolutely. So that was the first time that it happened. And we had 17.4 million visitors. That goal was actually set for 2026, and they achieved it 2 years early. Now, this year, because of all the MICE event, the corporate event, and also the soccer event that Morocco is hosting, it has surpassed that number already. They have surpassed 20 million visitors, and we still have a couple of months to go. And also, next month, we're hosting the African Cup. So you can just imagine how busy and incredible it's going to be for December and 2 weeks in January. So then globally, this year, Morocco ranked 13 globally, which is amazing. So
yeah. So this, how much of that is fueled by, A, you're a short ferry ride over from Spain and the rest of Europe. That's helpful.
Yes.
B, there must be a government there in place that wants to promote it.
Oh, 100%.
And really dove into this, you know, full stop. And what moves, as compared to when you were growing up, has the government done to make this a more attractive place for tourists? Or was it just word of mouth?
Well, the government has actually promoted it heavily for the last two decades. The government has a very strong presence in Europe versus the US, and I hope that can change in the future, because I have attended the WTM, which is World Travel, it's in London every year, November, and Morocco is big. They sponsor the whole event, and I went there, you know, a year or so ago, and it's magnificent. The setup, the tourism board, they have done an amazing, amazing job promoting Morocco. They also, a year or so, they have an extension of the tourism board in New York, but it's still not doing the same, if you would, in Europe versus the US. So hopefully that changes. And because of all those efforts, that the tourism board, the government, collectively, the results are incredible.
Now, I knew, like, in the 70s, you know, the reputation of Morocco in the 60s and 70s, it was part of the hippie trail. You know what I mean? You know, the
Absolutely.
Marrakesh Express and all, you know, that song and the whole thing. And that seemed to be who was going. You know, these kids backpacking across Morocco and,
yes.
you know, taking whatever substances they wanted to do. But that image of it seems to have changed. And with that comes plus and minus. The plus is that there's more money to go around, and it's a different kind of infrastructure. The B is that it's gotten more expensive, probably.
You're absolutely right.
Is it still available to the budget traveler, if he wants to not spend much? Or
they can.
Yeah, okay. But there's high-end, like five-star.
Yeah, of course. There's five-stars, six-stars. I mean, just to give you an idea, Mike, in Morocco, you can stay at a Riyadh, which is, former Moroccan houses with the courtyard and all that stuff, between probably $50 to $100 a night versus places, $30,000 a night. So it's just, Morocco is for everyone. You just have to look closely.
So, sure. How has I'm sure the number one, at least for Americans, the fear is safety and things like that, and they always worry about that. And the problem that I've had going through Africa and of course much of the world is you worry about scams, or you worry about getting ripped off from a driver or that kind of stuff. Has that improved? Have you found in the last couple decades, or was it kind of like that always, or is it over exaggerated?
Well, it is everything you said, Mike, is very accurate. So safety is Morocco is very safe. And I'll just give you an example. We have checkpoints from city to city, and then within a city, in less than a mile, you'll see like a police car. They use the Mercedes 15 passenger vans, and those are the ones that you see, but there's three or four other departments that you don't see, and they're just regular folks like you and me, so they know what's going on everywhere. And especially like in the square of Jemaa el Fna and stuff, everything is under camera, and then they have their own ways of finding out things and troublemakers. This is when it comes to safety. Morocco, it is very safe, especially when it comes to tourists, because it's from the government, from the king. The tourists are untouchable. Now, when it comes to scam, everybody will scam you with a beautiful smile on their faces.
My friend, when you hear my friend, that's the red flag right there. Come here, my friend. Oh, and, no, and, my friend. Where are you from?
And the funny thing, Mike, when you're passing by them, they'll speak to you probably an average of six different languages until you respond, and they got you. That's it.
Sure. What about the one thing I'm very bad at and I hate doing is the haggling in the markets. I'm not a good negotiator. I hate that whole process, but I'm assuming that's kind of the way it is. You never pay the price on the sticker, do you?
No, never. You're right. You never want to do that, Mike, because to them it's part of the experience. It's fun. Uh-huh. If you pay full price, it's just like they're not gonna like you. It's like, just haggle with me. They want you to haggle with them.
What about the drivers? What, like taxi drivers and stuff like that? Is there room to haggle as well?
Yes, but there's actually a positive change to the taxis, especially when you arrive, let's say Casablanca, Marrakesh. In the past, the taxis will team up against you, and they'll just take advantage of you. Now they have a kiosk outside the airport. Then you go and they ask you which part of, let's say, Marrakesh you're going to, and you say, I'm going to downtown. So they know the fare is, let's say, like $2. Then you'll pay $2. They give you a receipt, and you just present the receipt to the taxi.
Okay.
And that's it.
So that's good. So it's a flat set rate.
Yeah, it is a set rate from the airport. Now, everything else, there is a chance that you'll get scammed. A lot of them, they'll say, oh, the meter is not working, or I can do a flat rate, all that stuff. You will be scammed.
How about now the infrastructure of using credit cards and everything else? I mean, I know everybody wants cash still, but it's moving to a system now around the world where, a lot of times you don't need cash at all and are exchange money. So what's the money situation, and how accepted are credit cards in, say, restaurants, taxis, hotels, et cetera?
That's a really, really good question, Mike. The credit cards, you're absolutely right. They are more accepted now than a decade ago, especially when you go shopping, especially when you go to a restaurant, especially when you go to hotels. You can pay with your credit card. You can pay with your debit card. And also, the thing that I would like to add, Mike, is when you travel to Morocco, you always want to let your bank know. So in case you're going to withdraw some cash, sometimes the exchange rate when you bring USD to Morocco, there's places they the exchange rate is not to your favor. So when you do an ATM withdrawal, for example, that's a better exchange rate for you. Especially there's some banks in the US, they don't charge those international fees. So, and you save money that way.
Yeah, we always recommend that on this show that, you know, you always try to go to, if you're going to use an ATM, don't use the shady looking, go to a, you know, a large major bank.
Absolutely.
When they offer you there on every sale to convert, don't pay in the local, don't convert, pay in the local currency.
Absolutely.
And let your bank convert it because, you know, this machine, you have no idea. And that's so, right. Yeah, just be wise about that. One of the things about Morocco in general is it's become very popular with, say, Instagrammers and things like that. Yes. But they always seem to go to the same places. You know, there's Marrakesh, there's Chefchaouen, the Blue City, which I'll ask you about. But places like Fez and Casablanca also have major airports, and a lot of airlines go through there. But, you know, you hear mixed things about those places. I mean, and the downfall of Marrakesh is, or the bad thing, the negative about Marrakesh that I've heard is that it is so touristy. So give us the pluses or minuses of a place like Casablanca. Because I heard it's very big.
Yes.
But is there as much to see there? And how long do you recommend people stay?
Oh, my goodness. Mike, it seems like you've been preparing for this episode for years.
Well, yes, because I want to go. And there's a lot of questions I have. Because I hear a lot about this. Because I've interviewed so many people who have gone. And I've been to the south of Spain. And I know I could have hopped on a ferry in Malaga. And gotten there, and I just never did it because I ran out of time. So most people, if they're going to go, only have a week, maybe, say, like at least Americans.
Yes.
How do they cram so much without feeling tired? How can they see? What do you recommend? I know this is your job. I don't want to give away your job for free.
I completely understand. Okay. You know, what just do you recommend? Answer. This is before I answer this question. We talked about the ferry earlier, but I didn't answer it. Yes, there's a lot of people that come from Europe through Tangier through the ferry, and that's very, very busy July and August. That's when the Moroccans in Europe come. They drive and they use the ferry to get to Morocco. So that's the busiest season for them. In any other time of the year, it's one of the best ways to get to Morocco, and it's not really busy. It should take you about 45 minutes and you're good, versus hours and hours and hours during the summertime. So to go back to Casablanca, Casablanca is the biggest city in Morocco, is the economy hub of Morocco, and it is pretty big comparing to Marrakesh. Now, I want to talk about Casablanca, for example, in the early 1990s versus Marrakesh. Marrakesh was a small, traditional city. But then when the King Hassan II passed away, some laws have changed. And one of those laws is, in the past, a foreigner cannot own property in Morocco. He has to be a partner with a Moroccan person. The partnership has to be 50-50, and I could be wrong if it's 51 or 49, but it's I'm going to go with 50-50. So when the new king, Mohammed VI, took the throne, became king, he changed it, and now foreigners, they can own 100% of the properties. So one of the first things that happened to Marrakesh is it has expanded so fast and so quick and so much that it kind of surpassed the development in Casablanca. So Casablanca used to be where it's happening. And since then, Marrakesh is where it's happening now. And you're absolutely right. It is very touristy. But there's always a way around that. So Fez is also a big city, and it's located between two major mountains, the Rif Mountains and also the Atlas Mountains. And the weather, it's a little bit dry. It can get really hot during the summertime. Fez, again, is the oldest city downtown in Fez. Medina has about 9,000 to 10,000 streets, so you'll absolutely get lost. And if you're traveling, I always recommend a local guide with you, whether in Fez, whether in Casablanca, whether in Marrakesh. Now, the difference between these three cities, amazing job, by the way, Mike, because there's a huge difference. If somebody wants to spend one day in Morocco, I always say Fez, because it's still really? Yes, it still holds a lot of traditions, a lot of things that you see in Fez. They probably has phased out in other cities because of technology, you know, modernization and stuff like that. So in Fez, you can spend 2 months without seeing or doing the same thing every day. The same thing for Marrakesh. Casablanca is different. Casablanca, you can be in Casablanca maybe 24 hours. That's it. The mosque is the biggest attraction, Hassan II Mosque. Which is incredible. If you haven't been, I say I would highly, highly recommend it. There are a few spots in Casablanca, just incredible, but the time, you can do all of that in 1 day. Marrakesh needs a little bit more of your time. So, and you're right, a lot of people from America, when they go to Morocco, they have 1 week. So what can they do during that 1 week, Mike? I always recommend split the country into two. Do the north side of Morocco, or the south side of Morocco, because 7 days you won't be able to see it all. You're just going to be driving, not really enjoying anything. So
I have heard great things about the mountains.
Yes.
But is there a way to stay in the mountains? And I'm assuming up there it's a little cooler to get out of the heat. Is Chef Shawan in the mountains? And
yes,
I know this is one of the most photographed places ever. I mean, for people who don't know, Chef Shawan is called the Blue City. The buildings are all painted blue. And you can tell the story behind why that is and why they painted it all blue. It just looks amazing. But once you get there, what is there to do other than take photos of the blue
okay.
city?
Chef Shawan is located in the Rif Mountains. And we say Chef Shawan and the locals. And we also say Shawan. Mm-hmm. Shawan means two horns, because when you look at where it's located, the Rif Mountains, they look like they have two horns. So okay. That's what it means, Chef Shawan or Shawan. So Chef Shawan has become a super, super popular destination since 2017, because we had a Chinese convention in Morocco, and there were thousands of Chinese people in Morocco just visiting, attending conferences, and they went to Chef Shawan, and it changed forever.
Oh, no. Now they have busloads of Chinese tourists going up there?
Yes. And it's funny because they have a deal with the government. Everything is set up. You'll see the bus, everything in Chinese. They have their own. It's very independent. It's within Morocco, but it's really independent. That's and it's so much fun.
That's funny. Yeah. So, it is a little out of the way, though, right? You have to leave a couple of days back, probably.
It depends where you're coming. Normally, when you land in Casablanca, then you go to Rabat, then you go to Chef Shawan. And there's one of the most popular sites of Chef Shawan is when you go up the hill and you see the whole city on top of the hill, you know, with the blue light and, you know, the sunrise or the sunset is just beautiful, gorgeous. That place, we call it the Spanish Mosque. And that's the hill that you go up to. It's situated just, you know, against the city, if you would. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful, romantic view. So besides that, there's, you know, the music in Shawan is amazing. The cuisine, the food is just, it's the hospitality is very different. That's the thing about Morocco. Every city you go to, it's like a different country, really, with its own culture, its own vibe, its own people. It's just, it's amazing, really, Mike.
Now, about the language, but there's so many different regions. Yes. Are they speaking different dialects in all these different regions, or not that I would understand any of the dialects, but I mean, is it, as a Moroccan, do you go to certain parts of the country and be going, boy, I'm getting half of what they're saying.
You're absolutely right, Mike. In the north side of Morocco, because of the Rif Mountains, they speak a language, we call it Tarifit. And it's, you know, it's Amazigh. And it's very different than the other Amazigh languages that are spoken in Morocco. There's about 4 or 5 different dialects. So you're right. If you're traveling from the north to the south and going to the desert and different regions, you definitely need someone with you that can blend in with all those different languages spoken. So
yeah, it's pretty interesting. But I know as Americans, you know, a lot of them, when they travel, they love their cars. And I'm sure they ask you, well, we want to see all these places and we want to be on our own schedule. We want to rent a car. Do you discourage that? Or do you say, you know what, how is the bus situation, the trains? What is best?
What we do is we plan everything for them from A to Z. We have everything is private transportation, private driver, local guides, and so forth and so forth. In terms of renting a vehicle, I would not recommend it, especially if it's your first time in the country. Why? Because most likely you will be scammed, at least for the insurance for the car, even though you paid for it in the U.S. when right. you rented it. So then the way that people drive in Morocco is it's very different. You know, 2 lanes means 5 lanes, especially when you get to a city that it's really crowded with motorcycles, bicycles, mules, and donkeys like Marrakesh. And it's just like, you know, you cannot really move. So the first time visiting Morocco, I definitely would not recommend it. If you've been there before, then you have become a little bit familiar with the roads, with the situation, with everything. So Casablanca, it's much easier to drive because there's not a lot of motorcycles and bicycles, and it's big and they have big roads. Marrakesh is super crowded. Fez is super crowded. So that's why, you know, if you want to drive, just be careful.
What about the train situation in between the major cities? Is there a train situation? And if I take the ferry, say, from Spain, and you're up north, how easy is it for me to get from there, the port entry, to, say, Marrakesh? I mean, am I going to have to take a short flight? What's my quickest way?
The quickest way used to be, I would say, you can take the train. It's very comfortable, really, really nice and fast. But now Ryanair has added so many flights within Morocco, inside Morocco, from city to city, that it costs probably $70 versus, you know, $20 or $30, you know, with the train, and it saves you quite a bit of time. So.
Okay, and it can't be that long of a flight either, right?
It's got to
be
really short. Yeah, it's not. Yes.
You have time to go up and then come right back down again. That's about it. Okay. We haven't talked about the sea because I was looking into it when I was planning a trip once because I heard about, I Googled a beach. What's the best beach in Morocco and this town? Essaouira, I guess it is?
Essaouira.
Essaouira. It kept popping up. And there might even be a little surf scene there as well.
That's right.
So tell me about the beaches and when to go and if they're worth it and how's the water in terms of swimming and cleanliness and all that else.
Well, the beaches are amazing in Morocco and they don't get enough credit, if you would. We have
okay,
the
we'll give
Mediterranean.
Give us some love right now. There we go.
We have the Mediterranean side, which is the north side of Morocco, and it has some amazing, amazing, beautiful beaches. Then we have the coastal side on the west, which is the Atlantic Ocean, and it's 35,000 miles of coast, of beautiful oceans. So, you know, Essaouira, you're right, it is a small city. It's a very popular coastal city. We call it the Windy City of Morocco because most of the time when it's hot in Morocco, it's really cool and nice in Essaouira. And they do host an international surfing event every year. And there's many, many other surfing locations in Morocco. You have Imsouane, you have Taghazout, close to Agadir City as well. Then you have Merlift, then you have Dakhla. Dakhla, they play ocean golf. It sounds kind of weird, but they just put, you know, the ball in the little thing and they just
ocean
send it
gulf.
To the ocean. So it's so there's so much stuff to do in terms of, you know, beaches and stuff in Morocco. So
how easy is it to get to the beaches? I mean, I know, I don't know, but I guess, is Marrakesh the closest city to the beach?
No, actually, Marrakesh is, it has no beach, but from Marrakesh to Casablanca, it's 2.5 hours. Marrakesh to Essaouira, it's 3 hours. Casablanca is not really known for its beaches because they're a little bit rough. But in the outskirts of Casablanca, there's a city called Mohammedia. That's where a lot of people go. Really nice, calm and quiet beaches. Yeah.
So if I were to get over to Essaouira, how would I get there? What's the easiest way?
It depends where you're from. You know, Marrakesh or Casablanca, you can drive. That's
the
easiest.
Okay.
Yeah, you can drive. So.
Okay. But then you just told me not to rent a car.
Well,
so.
We'll take
you,
Mike.
Do I take a bus or
we'll
hire a driver?
Take you, hire a driver. It's the best way because when you look at it, hiring a driver may seem like you're paying too much at the upfront, but it's actually the best investment for you because you're saving really, really time more than anything else.
Okay. Well, I know this is always a concern with people from the West and certainly with women. You know, being a Muslim country, and in terms of women and exposure, how much they can show, how do they feel okay walking around by themselves? Alcohol. What's the what are the policies there?
Oh, those are really good questions. You know, when it comes to women, this is what I always get asked: those questions, safety, solo travelers, women, what to wear. And I always say, wear what makes you comfortable. Again, because we are a touristic country. We are very open. And we welcome people from everywhere, tourists, everybody. And we want you to be comfortable visiting Morocco. We want you to have a good experience. So there's no judgment. So it doesn't really matter for us what you wear, as long as you're comfortable wearing it. That's the most important.
I mean, obviously, going into mosques or something, you may have to cover your shoulders
The only mosque is Casablanca, Hassan II Mosque, and you just put something, you know, just like a scarf around your head. That's it.
Right. But in terms of like you going out or walking the streets or something.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
Okay. And wearing a bikini on the beach or something.
No, you're good. A lot of people, they have a perception. So when they go to Morocco, it's like their reality really changes because, oh, I didn't think you could do this. Oh, I didn't think you could wear this. So, and that's the first part. Then the second part that he mentioned is alcohol. But just to let you know, alcohol is more consumed by Moroccans than tourists. But the government has it backwards. Well, the government meant it for tourists.
Okay.
Is it
restricted? I mean,
no.
There's bars everywhere. I mean,
it's available everywhere. The system is a little different, Mike. Though there's bars, there's clubs, but then there's in the US you have Specs, you have other places that you can go and buy it. In Morocco, we call them pisserie. It's a French word. So those are specific, just small little stores that you go in and purchase them. So,
okay. How about coffee and tea? Which is more popular? What should I get? What must I drink when I'm in Morocco?
You have to drink Moroccan tea, mint tea. That's the most popular drink in Morocco. I'm a coffee drinker, but I also love Moroccan tea. That's why people will offer you anywhere you go. They'll offer you mint tea. Hey, come to our house. You know, they'll get you mint tea, some cookies and pastries. So definitely Moroccan tea. Try it.
Okay.
I think you're going to really like it.
What is different about it as compared to tea in other places? Is it the way it's prepared? Or is it grown? I know it's mint. I mean, that's one. But is it grown there and brewed a certain special way?
It's actually, the tea is not brewed there. And you're right, Mike. What makes it different is first the quality of the green tea that they use. And also the mint, there's a region in Morocco that it's really known for its mint, which is close to, it's called Stadt. So it's on the way to Casablanca. It's a small city. And the mint in Marrakesh is different than the mountains, different than, you know, so that gives it a different flavor, if you would. And also the way that it's prepared. There's a different way that, you know, people prepare the mint tea in Morocco. And again, it gives it a little bit of, you know, flavor, if you would, or different taste, if you would.
How come Morocco, I mean, aside from its advantage of being so close to Spain and with the ferry and everything else, but why has their tourism been so, you know, explosive in growth and everything? And a country like Tunisia, which is right nearby, has not. I mean, I know so many more people that have gone to Morocco, and nobody goes to Algeria and Tunisia as much, nearly as much. I mean, is it the governments there that have not promoted it as much?
Well, I remember when I was a kid back in the 80s and the 90s, Tunisia was the number one destination for a long time. Tunisia is amazing. It's a beautiful, beautiful, diverse country. So I think what has to do with it is definitely the government, because, you know, especially Tunisia, the olive oil that they have is just, the quality is just incredible. Algeria is an amazing country. But then again, when we talk about safety, when we talk about the government, things are not stable. Things are not really good in many different ways. And that really deters travelers and tourists from visiting those regions. So I love both countries. Especially Tunisia, because I remember the tourism in Tunisia was just beyond incredible. And by the way, they have a blue city as well in Tunisia.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
They do, yes.
Okay. And we'll blame the French. Yeah, that's an easy thing 100%. To do, right? I mean, you didn't say it, but I guess that's what everybody, we'll just blame the French. That's an easy thing to do.
I didn't say it.
Okay. I said it for you. There you go. The, like in terms of European tourists, where are most of them coming from when they go to Morocco? Are these from Spain? Are they coming from Germany, UK? Where are most of them coming from?
Okay. The tourists that are coming from Europe to Morocco, most of them, they know Morocco better than us, the locals. If you, and I'm being very honest, Mike. This
really?
Is, I swear to you. The European tourists, they're really good. But I want to talk specifically about the French. The French, because we were a French colony, so their favorite destination is Marrakesh. So a lot of people, when they retire, they live in Marrakesh. And again, this is back in the change for the 90s. And they live really, really well. Then the Spanish, the same thing. They love Morocco because it's so close and so forth. And when they travel to the north side, you know, they go everywhere. But one thing that I noticed with the Germans, yeah, some you'll find the city, but most of them, you'll find them in the mountains. You'll find them camping by themselves. I've seen them, Mike, in empty spaces. There's no one around for miles and miles and miles, and they're happy as can be.
I do a bit on the Germans in my comedy act on the ships and things like that. But because they're the most traveled people in the world. I mean, I'm not going to do the bit here. But one of the things is you could be the most remote place. You think you're off the grid. You can hack through 4 days of Borneo jungle, and you think you're by yourself. And then a naked German couple walks out and goes, "Guten Tag." You're like, "Where the hell did you come from? We've been here for 3 weeks." Okay. They love to get out there, man. I mean, they travel and they like to get away from it all.
I 100% I agree, because I've seen them in three different occasions. I mean, I was just stunned. I was stunned, right. and pleasantly, you know, surprised in a good way. And it made me feel really good.
Yeah. So. How much of the French influence is left in Morocco? Say in terms of like say the food. Or, I mean, can you still get around speaking French?
Well, French, yes.
The French old people probably speak it, right?
I mean, well, maybe everybody does. But the thing is, historically, if you look at it, the French influence probably would never fade away. It would probably take generations. It's not going to fade away. I don't think so, and anytime soon, because we use it in our own language. We use part of it, part of the French words, some of the Spanish words, because we were a colony. So in terms of the influence on the food, the Moroccan pastry is super rich as Moroccan, but then the French part of it is you cannot take out. It's mixed now. So those are amazing things to have, and I don't think they're gonna be separated ever, because they complete each other in a way. So
yeah, it's amazing when the colonists go somewhere, they always leave something behind. Like I went to Vietnam and you see like a banh mi sandwich, and it's like, why do I get this amazing bread in Vietnam where these are not bread people? The French were here. And they leave behind some bread, or wine or something. Now you have the pastry that you probably wouldn't have had otherwise. But
100%. Yeah, you're right.
I want to talk about you coming out to America 30 years ago. And happy anniversary, by the way.
Thank you. Thank
you. Could you have, and would you have done the same if you were growing up now? And picture yourself 30 years ago, and now you're a young man in Morocco. Do you think you would still come to America, or would you go somewhere else?
I would probably, taking everything into consideration, I would not leave the country. Because,
really?
Yes, okay. Because I love being American. I love America. It's beyond incredible. The doors that, being in America has opened for me for the last decades. The people that I was able to help and things that I was able to help only because I'm here. So Morocco has changed. And when I lived in Morocco, I really took it for granted. I wanted to get out as soon as I could, because so many things I did not know and I did not realize until so much later. Now, when we started Destinations Morocco, it really brought me back to Morocco. And it seems like I fell in love with the place all over again. And it's kind of strange in a way, because I'm going in a few days. And when I go, I miss America. I miss Houston. I miss my friends, my family here. That's the good thing. It's a sword with double edge. You never feel content. You never feel 100% happiness, because that's the benefit and the advantage of being an immigrant. So, and you get to feel those, the pain and the joy at the same time, and embrace both of them. And I will not take anything for granted. I love it, I embrace it, and I'm super grateful for it.
When you return, what's the first thing you eat when you go back?
Oh my goodness. I'll tell you what the first thing that I ate last time when I visited. Every time I go to Morocco, I get so excited that I probably don't sleep for 2 or 3 days. And that's the honest truth. And every time I go, it feels surreal. So the last time I had what we call bisara, it can be made with different vegetables. One vegetable, some they make it with the green peas. Some they make it with, I forgot the name. It's a type of bean. Then they smash it. They, in like a mixer. Then they add olive oil. They add, spices and paprika at the end. And it tastes really, really good with a hot, Moroccan bread, if you
will. Yeah, right. Is this like a chickpea? Is this like a hummus? Yeah. Like a hummus?
It's different than hummus.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And it's so amazing.
When you tell people they're going, what do you tell them that they have to eat up, eat and drink? I know the tea, you have to have the tea, but what are the things? What's the tip? What's like the quintessential Moroccan dish that you need to have?
They always want to go for a tagine or couscous. Those are the most popular ones.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Okay. Tagine. Yeah, that's right. How is it different from like, say, Tunisian or Algeria? Is it different?
It is different. The Moroccan tagine is Moroccan. It's originally Moroccan, and the spices are different. Even the Moroccan tagine is different from city to city, because of the spices they use, because of the different way they make it and they cook it, and also the different in tagine. Like the tagines that are in Fez, for example, are different than the ones in Marrakesh.
Why?
Yeah.
Just from the local ingredients or the immigrants?
That's right. That's right, okay. Mike, because when you look at Fez, and again, we just mentioned it, that it's located in between two different mountains, the Rif Mountains and the Atlas Mountains, the clay is dark gray and it has less lead. And it they make very strong tagines, really, really good and lasting for a long time. The ones for the rest of the country, they look kind of reddish. The clay is reddish. So that's why you see the tagine is kind of reddish in a way. And it has a little bit of high level of lead, most of them. So except, you know, if they've been, you know, exported, then it's a different story. So they go through treatment, they go through, you know, stuff to get approved to be sold overseas. So that makes a difference also in the flavor in the tagine and also the way you cook it. You slow cook it, you know, for hours and hours, just let it simmer. And the results are incredible and tasty.
In terms of meat, are they mostly, I mean, is something like lamb very popular or is it chicken or it's lamb country, isn't it?
You're right, Mike. Yes. When I grew up, it was a lamb country. I'm not sure if it still is, but lamb is definitely very popular. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about, is it easy to be a vegetarian?
Yes.
Okay. Good to know. Because I travel with a vegetarian a lot these days, and so we have to look around. What about the visa situation for Americans and everyone else? Do they have to buy a visa beforehand, or can you buy it at the airport, or is it not needed?
In some countries, it is not needed. For Americans, Canadians, you can go to Morocco for 90 days without a visa.
Okay.
Which is really good.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
How about people who are like digital nomads? Are they offering that kind of visa or people who want to stay longer or work there or retire there?
Well, retirement, I'm not sure. I'm sure there's some conditions that the government can work out. If they want to work there, again, they have to check with the government. Because I have a friend of mine, and she was there, and then every 3 months she has to go in, and she loves to travel. So she'll go to Tunisia, she'll go to Jordan, she'll go and come back. So now she's working in Morocco, and I'm sure somebody has sponsored her to stay and work in Morocco. So,
okay. Is it a problem if you have an Israel stamp in your passport?
No, it's a plus. No.
Oh, really? Okay.
No.
Because I've been to Jordan, I've been to, you know, place like that. But, you know, some places they won't let you in if you have a Israeli stamp on your passport.
Because we there used to be flights, direct flight from Casablanca to Tel Aviv in 2022.
Oh, okay.
And then it got stopped because of the war. Now they are reopening that line. So there's a direct flight from Israel to Morocco. And also, we have always had a good relationship with Israel.
Okay.
So, and there's if you look at the Israeli government, there's a lot of, you know, ministers and that originally they are from Morocco. So there's a very strong relationship. So there's a lot of Moroccan Jews in Israel. And once they opened the borders, so many came back and with their, you know, kids and grandkids. So it's incredible.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know. Also, when you said, you know, it's so popular in July and August for the Moroccans to go back home, Morocco in July and August sounds very, very hot. So what are the best months if I want to go? And I'm sure certain places around are better than others during the summer, and during the winter, some are better. So when people visit, you have to time this out at the right time. Because you don't want to be, I mean, I've been in hot cities during the summer, and you don't want to do that. And you're living in Houston, so you've gotten spoiled with air conditioning. So am I going to suffer if I go in July and August in the heat?
You will absolutely suffer, Mike.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
It is very hot, and I always recommend, if you can avoid it, please do. And a lot of people cannot because of the schedule, the school schedule for their kids.
Of course, yeah.
So especially coming from Europe, they give them 2 months vacation. In the U.S., we don't get 2 months, but we depending where you're from and so forth, we have to come back in early August, you know, for our son to go back to school. So we have done it in the summertime many, many times, but it's really, really difficult and very challenging. So, and the best times to go, normally I would say March, April, May, and then even July, I mean, June is good. Then October, November are good as well. September is still a little bit hot. Yeah. Yeah.
Shoulder season. What is it like over like December, January? Is it cold? Does it get pretty cold at night?
Yes, it does get cold. And again, depending which region you're from, sometimes it does snow in the mountains. So if you're traveling in December, Mike, I always say make your bookings an average of 9 months ahead.
9 months?
Ooh, yes.
Boy.
Because the last two weeks of December, because of the holidays, because of Christmas and New Year's,
yeah, sure,
it gets really, really, really busy and crowded. And then a lot of the accommodations, they're not going to book you just for one night. They're
going to
book you for at least 3 or 4 nights, depending on the accommodation or the hotel. So this year is definitely insane. January normally is very slow month, and it's a good month to go. It does rain a little bit, but that would not, you know, affect your experience. This year, January 2026, the first 2 weeks are still going to be super busy because of the African Cup and the finals.
Oh, yeah, the soccer. Yeah, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And congratulations on the soccer. They're doing very well. They did the last World Cup. They're,
yes, thank you.
It was a big surprise.
You. Oh,
that's got to be very exciting.
Oh, 100%, yes.
Is there a bar in Houston, like a soccer bar you go, that like all the Moroccans go to watch the games?
Well, there's a few shops, yes. coffee shops, if you would, like Middle Eastern shops. And,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they've already qualified, I think, for the next one.
Yeah, here. For the 2026, yeah. Yeah, they did, yes.
That's very exciting. Yeah, I always wonder, is there a time, like the beaches in Asuaria, where it's too cold to swim? Would it be too cold ever to swim there? Or
I would say the winter time, unless you have a good doctor or good insurance.
But does the water get too cold, or is this the air too windy and cold?
It's just too windy. But I've seen people swim, you know, in January, February. They swim all the time.
Yeah, those are the crazy Germans. So let's talk about prices now. Before when people come to you, they say, "Okay, in terms of budget, can you know?" There's all different levels of budget. What would be a mid range of what I would spend for, let's say, a week if I wanted a guide and set it up with you? And for the packages that you sell, what range of budget?
Okay. A range is good, and I'm very glad that you said the range, because you said there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of, you know,
sure.
Depends where they're going to stay and what's the cost. Is it $100? Is it $500? Is it $1,000 a night? So that's why it really, really makes a difference on the cost versus the transportation, the local guides. Everything else literally is the same. It does not change. So for a 7-day, I always tell people it's probably going to be around maybe $2,700 to $3,500. It depends again per person. So, and it can be, you know, two people. The more people they travel with each other, the less they save more. So, because you pay for the transportation that it's going to do one person, it's the same that it's going to be with six people. So that's you save money.
Well, let's say the cost of a typical dinner. We go out, we have dinner. We each have one drink apiece. How much are we spending?
In a nice place, I would say probably $75.
Okay.
Yeah. Really nice.
Total.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's not unreasonable. Yeah. Like and say a typical lunch between the two of us would cost like $20 to $30.
Yeah, that's it. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. What is the number one thing you tell people when they're worried about safety and things like that? Just have like street smarts, you know, don't fall for the first cab driver that comes up to you or tries to sell you things. I mean, what do you tell people?
Well, we're very glad, because a lot of them, they go with us, so they have that peace of mind. If they're traveling by themselves, I would say you know, just be aware of your surroundings. Just pay attention. Everybody that smiles at you may not be really helping you. They probably just want to take advantage and help themselves.
And don't drink the water, right?
Don't drink the water, yes.
Okay. Do the mountains in Morocco get snow in the winter?
Yes. A lot of them do, yes.
But no skiing? No big skiing?
No, there is actually.
There is skiing?
Yes, there is skiing. There's a place called Okemden in the outskirts of Marrakesh, and it starts snowing around this time. So normally when we were kids, by December or so, they used to organize escorted tours, you know, on the weekends. And we used to go with the school, and it's so much fun. Amazing. Yeah. And sometimes we go with the family, which is incredible.
So when you moved here at, you were probably
22,
and you had never been here before.
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. So getting off the plane, your first week in America, what was the biggest culture shock? What was the thing that, your eyes
Mike.
Were so wide?
The biggest culture shock, one of them, every day when I wake up, there's carpet under my feet, and that's something I'm not used to.
Wall-to-wall carpet.
Yes. I honestly, for 2 weeks, I could not believe that I am in America. I could not believe. The reason is because when I started preparing, I didn't know if I could make it or not make it, because with all the measurements, with all the numbers, I don't qualify to come to the U.S. in any way possible. So I didn't want to think of me in the U.S. I blocked myself thinking that I'm coming to the U.S. or thinking of my life or how it would be or what first day would be or anything would be. Me in the U.S. So that was one of the things that I had to do. During that summertime, I didn't sleep for many, many nights because I had to prepare myself, you know. So, and that's why when I made it here, and it's like, I can't believe it. So it was just one of the things that I'll never forget. So.
Was it Houston because they accepted you at school, or did
That's
you have
right.
family there, or did you know anybody?
I didn't have family, but what I had is one of our neighbors, and it's funny. He came here before me, and he came to visit his parents and family, and I just went to say goodbye. And then he looked and was like, hey, if you want to come to the U.S., I can send you the I-20 from school. And I just looked at him and said, yeah, sure. But then, you know, a couple of weeks, he calls his mom and he said, hey, can you check with Azadin if he's still interested? And then his mom came to mom and was like, hey, you know, this is what happened. Are you still interested? And I was like, okay, we got to talk about it now. So it sounds serious. And that's how I started really preparing.
Wow. And not only did you walk into America, you walked into Texas, which isn't even a different America. Do a lot of it. So you got double culture shock there. You know, you had to learn about barbecue and the rodeo and high school football and the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness. You're 100% right.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've been there many times. When people go to your site, what is the process? I mean, how far ahead should they book Morocco? You said, you know, if it's the peak season, you want to go 9 months in advance. But what is the typical, 3 months or 2 months people plan this before they leave?
I would say 2 months is really too late. I consider I wouldn't say too late, but I'll say it's late. But if like 2025 was just insane, 2 months I will consider it too late. In 2026, 2 months, it's still a bit late if it's going to be in the busy season, March, April, and May. We are in November, and we already have bookings in June of next year. It's complete bookings. So, and that's the thing that I noticed with a lot of people this year, they're booking really ahead of time, Mike.
Yeah.
So, which is really, really nice because they get to pick the best accommodations, the best of everything, literally, the local guides, the drivers. So when you do it early. So I highly recommend, in terms of time, start doing your research at maybe 6 months, 5 months, If you find us through a podcast, you know, the podcast is amazing. Everything is in it, really. The content is incredible. It's going to save you a lot of time. So if you decide to go with us, then we're very grateful. If you decide not to go with us, you will still have an amazing time in Morocco.
I work a lot on cruise ships now, but I'm wondering, is Morocco on a cruise ship stop? I mean, are there certain places that they stop
yes.
there?
Yes. Yeah. Morocco is in, it's one of the stops. They make two stops, actually. One stop is in Casablanca, which we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, what they do is they have one full day and they can book a tour through the cruise to do activities for that day. And they can still do Casablanca, like we said, which would be perfect. And they can come back to the port around, you know, 4 o'clock or so. Or they can do a day trip, if you would, to Marrakesh, do a site visit in Marrakesh, then come back to Casablanca. So normally we'll pick them up around 9:30 a.m. And then after they finish the tour, we'll just bring them back to the port.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is a good time now to get your plugs in and where I tell people where the website is and on social media, where can people find you if they want to learn more about Morocco?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for that, Mike. I really appreciate it. We have a website. It's destinationsmorocco.com. That's destinations with an S, morocco.com. And then we have the podcast, which is Destination Morocco Podcast. And it is number one on Apple Podcasts, and it is number one on Spotify podcast when it comes to travel to Morocco. So, and then in I'm really big on LinkedIn. Just Google my name, the way that it's spelled, as Dean El Mustakim. Then we have Instagram at Destination Morocco. Then our YouTube channel, just Google the name Destinations Morocco and it'll pop up. So,
see, you're becoming a media star.
Well,
you are not prepared for a shy man. Now you have to promote yourself. I know it's not easy, but, you know, we do what we do.
Absolutely.
We have to do these days.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on not only the podcast, but the business. I hope to visit Morocco soon. I'm going to be near by this summer, but again, it's going to be August, which is going to be very hot, but I will get there. I am determined to get there. And when I do, you're going to be the man I talk to.
Thank you.
First.
Thank you, Mike.
And if you ever come to LA, you let me know and I'll give you a proper tour or
absolutely.
At least tell you where to go. But finally, what do you think your experience is of being, you know, in two different countries and different views of the world? What has it taught you about people? What has it taught you about the world? And how has it changed you as a person? What has travel taught you?
Oh my gosh, Mike. You know when I came to America in 1995, it took me really some time to understand that two worlds really exist at the same time, but yet so different. Morocco then, it's like going back in time 200 years, if you would, compared to the US. Morocco has developed so much, and it's really nice to see all of that. But I'm very grateful to see and be part of both worlds, the US and Morocco, if you would. What it taught me, people are amazing. People are incredible. People, especially in the US, in Texas, it's, you know, Texas is very different, but I love it. It's, Texans have been good to me. You know, Houston is the most diverse city in America, and I'm very grateful to be part of it. Houstonians have supported me for the last 30 years. So if I can just do something, give back, I will never pay them back. You know, Houstonians, Texans, America, Americans. So it is a privilege to be here, Mike. And I'm very grateful for it. And then what it taught me is expand your horizon, be open-minded. We're all the same. It doesn't matter where we're from. We want the same things, you know, experience life, enjoy life. And I definitely want to travel more, so.
Well, how old you have one child?
Yes, one. He's 10.
10, okay.
Yes.
Well, you got about 8 more years. and then things will loosen up a little bit. Then you'll have a lot more time, I think. We got to get that kid out of high school. We got to get him
absolutely.
Out of high school, and then you'll be fine. Then you'll be in Morocco all the time.
Thank you.
And elsewhere as well. But Azine, stay on the line. I'll talk to you afterwards. But thank you for doing this. And
absolutely.
Destination Morocco, everybody. Thank you, Asdeen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
I'm Pauline Frommer. I've spent most of my life writing, talking, and thinking about travel. Not just where to go, but how to go in a way that's meaningful. On the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore the trends, people, and ideas shaping how we see the world. If you care about the why as much as the where, I hope you'll join me. You can find new episodes weekly at voyescape.com.